Welcome to another mailbag episode of It's a Mimic, where we do our best to answer 20 questions that you, the listeners, have sent us. In these episodes, we never know what we're going to get. What we do know is that we're going to roll initiative to see who asks the question in which order, and the person that reads it out first has to answer it first. But before I get started, let's check in with my other two Dungeon Masters, Dan and Dave.
He said my name first, bitch.
How are you guys? Alphabetical order. Just makes more sense.
I mean, age before beauty.
No. Yeah, I'm older and handsomer. Hmm. Oh, yeah. He's smarter.
My hairline.
He's
says
having
otherwise.
A bad day. Just give it to him.
No, beauty's not just in hairlines.
What? Since when?
No, I'm good. I usually get like pulled into doing legend lore episodes now that I've soft retired from the podcast. Mm-hmm. So like this is the first time in about 4 months, it hasn't been Adam sitting across the table from me. So, hi guys.
Interesting. This is actually the first time in like 4 months that I've been across a table from people and not doing it online.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think this is the first time in a while that I have actually recorded an episode. It's been a minute.
Oh.
So I've just been super busy. But
well, welcome back, Dave.
Thanks.
I would say it's nice to have you, but I don't want to lie to you.
I appreciate that. Well, I wouldn't believe you anyways.
I would say it's nice to have you too, but I haven't quite plugged my nose from the aroma yet. So,
well, chop chop. You're only hurting you.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, guys, let's roll off and let's start some questions.
Oh no.
All right, oh, no. Coming in hot.
All right, so Dan and I both crit failed.
Kyle's going to win it with 13.
One and one is two. Here, we got to do this again.
Oh, yeah, I guess we got to figure out the order, yeah. A 12 and a 2.
12 and a 2. Well, step in the right direction, Dan. Yeah.
It's only up from here.
You say that, but I think we all
know. I can always get knocked back down.
Oh, yeah.
Story of my life, right?
You're goddamn right.
All right, so to start us off, King of Rot asks, could we please get some more tips and plot hooks for using infernal machines from Descent into Avernus on the material plane?
The person who asks it has to answer it first.
Oh, yeah, right, that's me.
Yeah.
It always feels awkward answering my own questions. You know what would be really fun is like a death race or a Mad Max scenario.
Yeah.
Right? You're trolling around in a desert or you got like some crazy city where they're putting on a fucking one of those battle royales.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to change it because everyone looks at the infernal machines and they go fucking death race. They go Mad Max. They go Fury Road. They go something like that. Nah, man. At the beginning of...
You're going to say pod racing, aren't you?
No, I'm not going to say pod racing. Although, it's so wizard. No, pod racing is actually a good idea. Yeah. I was going to say, at the beginning of the Tomb of Annihilation, there's a whole section inside of the like Port Nianzaru, the like main town that's there, that has dinosaur racing. Now, having dinosaur racing is cool, but I also grew up in the age where, like, if it could become a Transformer, they made a Transformer show about it. Mm-hmm. And I was a huge fan of Beast Machines and Dino Wars. So, you had dinosaur robot racing now, and you infuse the two together. I also do really like the Soul Coin, like, mechanic.
Yeah.
And yes, pun intended, talking about Infernal Machines and mechanics, but, like, The using a soul coin to power a thing, it just sounds cool. And it gives you that inspiration to leap off that and to say, you know, hey, let's use, we have mini Nautiloids that we're driving now in an astral sea race, and you have to use brains for it, right? And the fact that Nautiloids kind of look like pod racers is not part of this equation, but it is,
well, it is now. Yeah. Okay, so first of all, every time I think of the Infernal Machines, I get the vibes from that Jack Black inspired video game, Brutal Legends.
Oh, that thing's so good. I love that game.
I never played it.
No, you're essentially like you're a roadie who gets crushed doing a sound check. And you end up in hell, and you have to like amass an army, blah blah blah.
All right,
but
it is the most metal game that ever meddled on purpose.
Oh, it's called like Brutal Legends is what it's called. It is great. You get an army of like headbangers, and they just like run around headbanging, and when they hit them with their head, it does damage, and like
yeah, all right,
yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne plays the devil.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm thinking of like the 7,000 guitar army from Idiocracy, too, kind of.
Yeah. Actually, I'm thinking, now that you mentioned that, I'm thinking like the Dildozer Infernal Machine.
Yeah.
All right, from Idiocracy, you know? Yeah, Dan knows.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows. I bet he knows. It's inspired a couple of pieces of his furniture, I hear, actually.
More than a couple.
More than...
Yeah. It's his entire living room.
But no, for real, though, because, you know, I'm me, and I have to. I'm going to put the Eberron spin on it. Yeah. Just to kind of build off of what Dan did with, like, the Dinobot, make that machines. I like the idea of maybe you find one of these Warforged juggernauts, and it can transform into something like that. You got to go into the Mornland to get, like, the last couple that existed. That way they're still kind of rare, and they're not everywhere, right?
Yeah. All right.
I kind of think that might be a neat little...
I really like having the idea of, you know, you always have that one player that wants that really cool mount, whether it's like a dire sheep or dire ram or a dire boar or some sort of dragon or griffin or whatever, right?
Mm.
Give them the motorcycle, right? And you want them to, like, give them the motorcycle that straight up bat out of hells out of the medieval walled village, right? Like, just ride over the walls in a gout of flame. Right? Like, it just, ugh.
It's one way to make an entrance.
Or an exit.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so first of all, I just want to say that pod racing is like the PG version of Death Race. I mean, come on, Death Race is like perfectly suited for it.
Yes.
Right? I'm talking about you kill a pedestrian, you get yourself a soul coin, right? You have like tributes, like in Hunger Games too. So, yep. You know, you get a devil that sponsors you and they're like, I like the cut of your jib. Here's a couple soul coins to, you know, help you out.
Well, we're going to, apparently this episode is just going to be about this one question. Sorry, everybody else. also, Twisted Metal.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Right? So if I could have an infernal machine that looks like an ice cream truck, I'm down.
Yeah.
Right?
Or one with a guy whose arms are stuck out and a wheel on the end of each arm?
Yep.
That was Twisted Metal, right?
I believe so, yeah. It was like the third one.
Actually,
yeah.
Of course it was.
Did you guys actually watch the show, just as a quick aside?
I did.
So fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy. It, like, I watched it with Adam, so I was hanging out with Adam quite a lot in December, and him and I, like, we made the commitment, like, we're going to watch Twisted Metal. So we sat down, like, between... like 3 days we binged this entire show, and it was just the most, like, it nods toward its predecessor, but it makes it its own thing. And I saw Anthony Mackie as the lead, and I went, that's not going to be good, because he's not a comedy actor. I don't see him and think of comedy, right? I see him and think of Altered Carbon and of course the Marvel movies, right?
But he did that awesome Christmas movie with Seth Rogen.
What awesome Christmas movie was Seth Rogen?
Oh, The Last Christmas?
I don't know.
Oh, is that
Joseph the Gordon day Levin, before right? or something? Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
The night before, maybe.
The night before.
Yeah, probably. Let's do the next question.
Yeah, next question. The next question is the second question, and it has been... Sorry, I'll stop. This is from Makusa_DM. Kyle and others.
So yeah, that's right. You. Nobody else gets named.
We're not others. No others. Don't worry.
No, okay, so Kyle, you get to answer this one.
Since you mentioned Grim Hollow, what game mechanics and in-game NPC factions did you port into your home game? Also, with their Citadel of Unseen Sun adventure coming out soon, would you be interested in running it? Or their Valakan Raiders adventure. Did I say that right? I don't know much about Grim Hollow.
I know next to nothing about Grim Hollow, and I'm really hoping, for Makusa's sake, you actually do know something about Grim Hollow.
I do know something about Grim Hollow. Cool. I've mentioned it on this podcast before, so I think that's why I maybe got named for it.
Yeah.
But it's like grimdark, right? It is.
But is it still like fantasy?
Torn and tortured world. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, cool.
There's it's a lot of aberrations and undead. Right?
Okay, so it's metal D&D.
Yeah.
Like metal album cover D&D.
Yeah, I mean, it's very like Curse of Strahd almost feeling, right? Like there's an entire nation of vampires.
Is it depressing like Strahd is? Because like you get this ambience with Strahd where like everything is kind of weighing you down.
Yeah.
And it's just depressing, right? Whereas where it comes to like my when I want to run like a metal kind of campaign, it's like high octane, just loud noises.
Yeah.
Not depressing.
Yeah, I would say it's on the depressing scale. Okay. You know, it's not a happy time in Grim Hollow.
What kind of mechanics does it employ?
I mean, honestly, it's ported for D&D, but they just add new stuff. Like, the one thing I've been recently looking at is like an Eldritch Effect table.
Oh, okay.
So it's almost kind of Wild Search, but it's more to do with like Eldritch Effects, which is kind of cool. So they definitely build on aberrations and make their own kind. They got some cool undead stuff. Man, there's just so much to it. And yeah, I just kind of like the story of the world building as well. I haven't actually used any of it in game yet, but I would be interested in running it. Try it out.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting kind of setting. I was thinking more like Metalocalypse kind of vibe.
Mm.
A little more, not quite, no?
No, I wouldn't say that kind of dark kind of thing, yeah.
Okay, although that would be pretty metal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does have kind of a nihilist feel to it, but yeah, no, I don't think it's a one-to-one kind of
okay.
thing.
No, okay.
Cool. Okay, next question. And this one brings in concerns for our listenership. It's by Tarzan of the Desert, and it says, okay, no one seems to want to say it, but do Borg have genitals? Why was Jean-Luc Picard special to the Borg? Why did they turn him into Locutus? And was it because the Borg Queen was impressed by his big, swinging Picard? I'm going to say this right now. I am not a big Star Trek fan.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer my fantasy. So when it comes to my thinly disguised sci-fi as fantasy, or fantasy as sci-fi, I prefer Star Wars over anything with my space samurai. So I'm not the guy to answer this question.
Fair enough. I feel like this might have been in the wrong mailbag as well, because they're also doing a Star Trek one.
Oh, yeah, they're doing a Star Trek one down the hall right now. Yeah.
Oh, well, Dave.
Okay, well, I mean, I will tackle this. I am a Star Trek fan. This sure. one, this one's pretty cut and dry. Some of them have genitals. I mean, if you look, like, the Borg have different parts taken off of different Borg.
Is it like that one guy in From Dusk Till Dawn with the pistol, the revolver?
It could be. Yeah. Right? Like, in some cases... Right? Because it's kind of the thing about the Borg.
And if it's not, why is it wrong?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Because every single one should be that.
Can you explain that analogy to me?
Did you ever see the Quentin Tarantino movie From Dusk Till Dawn?
I have not.
Okay. Quentin Tarantino, who plays, weirdly, a freak with a foot fetish.
Oh.
Yeah, he played himself.
He played himself. And George Clooney go to a bar... in the middle of the desert somewhere. Samuel Hayek is there as well. And I,
cause
the scenes where she's in the movie, I know very well. Yeah. The rest of it, I'm not too familiar. but there's like a bunch of hitmen and like bounty hunters that are inside this bar.
Okay.
One of the guys, has a dick that is a revolver. Like he leans back when he's like, there's a bunch of posturing. He leans back. And, like, opens his fly and his little revolver penis pops out.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel is also there as a priest.
Clearly.
Clearly. Is it Harvey Keitel?
I can't remember.
It's a Quentin Tarantino movie, so it's a safe bet.
Yeah. It seems like a really odd casting choice for a priest, but
Yes. Apparently he's like a fallen priest, and like the bar is all vampires also, by the way. All
right.
Including Selma Hayek. Who...
Oh, spoiler alert, Dan. Jeez. Yeah,
it's a 35-year-old movie. And honestly, you don't really watch it up until the point where the vampires become a thing, because by then, the part with Sam Hayek's done.
As are you.
Finished. The word is finished.
Yeah.
No, but there's a bunch of weird fucking bounty hunters in that, and one of them has a penis gun.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Jean-Luc Picard has a penis gun.
Has a penis gun. Well, how do we make the Star Trek?
Let's get back to the original question here. Yes, they have genitals. Why was Jean-Luc Picard special? Well, I mean, the reason he was so special is because the Enterprise was like the flagship of the Federation fleet. That's why. Like he was the top captain. Like there was some prestige there, and that's what they were going after. That's why Jean-Luc, right?
Yeah.
Why? And that's why they turned him into Locutus. Was it because the Borg Queen? Obviously she was. I mean, she didn't have parts to match it because, you know, she was only there from like the shoulders up. We saw that in First Contact.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure why she would be super interested in it, but I'm sure she was impressed.
Yeah. I guess it was just aesthetically pleasing. Looking at.
Yeah, it's like really.
It's got bald on the top, right?
Yeah. It doesn't hook one way or the other. It's just like.
It's fully engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make it so.
Yeah. Okay, we need to move on. Read the next question to Kyle.
I got.
Is it his number one?
I mean, I didn't get to answer that question, but that's fine. Because I don't know that much about Star Trek. Hydrus asks, running Tomb of Annihilation, what creative ways could I foreshadow major plot points and characters? Acerak, Sown Sisters, Raznissi?
Raznissi, yeah.
Raznissi, etc. Oh, I gotta answer it again. I've never run Tomb of Annihilation, so I have.
I've run it like 3 times.
Okay.
In how many different editions?
I mean, only in 5th, because it's only Tomb of Annihilation.
Oh, 5th. I guess it was Tomb of.
Right.
Yeah,
I have run the Tomb of Horrors in quite a lot, but. I've said this before. I think I reviewed it on Legend Lore. It might have been one of the ones
I did. I think I was with you. We had a Chalt episode about it.
Yeah. The actual Tomb of Horrors part, the tomb in the Tomb of Annihilation is like the last chapter and a half. And it's Tomb of Horrors light. Like, you want Tomb of Horrors, just get Yawning Portal. It's better.
Okay.
But how to forecast these things? I mean... spoilers for Tomb of Annihilation, if you have not yet played it, or know anything about it, you are there because there is a death plague going on, and people who have, been under the effect of resurrection magic are now getting sick and dying. So if you have been resurrected at any point in time in your life, you are dying. Now, the only people who could afford resurrection magic and those kind of things are either the incredibly pious or the incredibly powerful, right? Or the incredibly wealthy. Now. Yeah. So either way, one of those three, everyone is scrambling to find a reason. Now, the reason is within the Tomb of Annihilation. I'm not going to give you spoilers at the end for that. But Acerak is up to some shit, right? And it's...
Spoiler! You're gonna die!
Yeah. So, if every single powerful, like, ultimate powerful being on the planet is interested in solving one specific issue, just think of the amount of wealth, influence, everything thrown at this issue, right? So when you get to Port Nianzaru, it should be a bustling village, okay? There should be no end to rumors, NPCs, people you could talk to be like, hey, I heard that maybe a lich is up to this. Like, drop rumors. And for every rumor that is 100% true, give 3 that are mostly true, 5 that are mostly not true, and 10 that are straight up false, right? Send your players on a wild goose chase. You have a jungle to explore. One of the things that I found very, very difficult when it came to Chalt was not going in a straight line to where I needed to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to Raznissi, when it comes to the Sown Sisters, when it comes to Acerak, when it comes to even like the Van Helsing equivalent is also running around the town. There's a big Aarakocra monastery that is starting to expand out. You have this major faction war happening as well. With like Fort Justice, I think it's called. It's been a bit. But it's not hard to drop these little clues in with just random NPCs throughout. Now, if you're in the middle of the jungle, Acerak is a lich. He's a lich surrounded by Grung, surrounded by... so is Raznissi. He's also a undead thing. A lich. So, like, you can go through and whenever you have random encounters in the jungle, make them undead.
Mm-hmm.
The jungles of Chalt are, like, just lousy with undead. So, fill it with undead. Why are these things undead? And, like, give them marks. Add these symbols around. Have a cult working behind the scenes of Acerak that is working to, like, push these rumors, push these narratives out. Because Acerak needs time. So he's going to have a cult that helps him, that helps delay everyone finding him so he can have time, right? So I would have survivors of raids pass things on to the party or find clues within like abandoned campsites. There's dinosaurs. So like They're straight up an undead T-Rex at one point. So have that undead T-Rex, which one of its mechanics is throwing up zombies that you fight.
Love it.
The worst Pez machine ever.
Yeah. Yes. Have that thing, like, throw up guides or people that you know could give a clue as to where a Serac is. Also, keep in mind, you are given, like, I think 18 guides or something like that, 19, like, NPC guides that are fully fleshed out with wants and needs and desires and everything that lead you throughout. Use those to push your narrative, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to take a little bit of pre-planning, but you have a worldwide crisis happening right now. Magic is under attack. The world will be responding, and that opens you up as a DM to be able to kind of put in whatever the fuck you want and rationalize it.
Yeah. All right. How far out do you allude to a bad guy?
Immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just what degree of illusion you use, right? Like, I don't straight up say, oh yeah, guys, a Serac is the end boss. He's in this section of the no.
Yeah.
No, right? But like, there is a warping of the magics that has caused the undead to stir and the living to die.
Yeah.
Right? You don't even necessarily need to know that it is resurrection magic specifically that is under attack here.
Mm-hmm.
It could be packaged as healing magic is going weird, guys.
Yeah.
Right? And, oh, if you're running Tomb of Annihilation and not running Meat Grinder, you're doing it wrong. I'm just saying, there are rules in there where, like, for death saves, you have to roll 15 up instead of 10 up. Right?
Brutal.
Yeah.
Do that. Right? It should be deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You should not be able to, like I did in one campaign, prance around like as a tiefling bard for 15 levels, literally playing music at things until they died.
Yeah.
Like, you should not be able to do that with Tomb of Annihilation if it is played with the intensity that it needs. It should feel like a rush because healing magic is going, resurrection magic is going. You're not coming back.
Yeah.
Right? There's no plan B, right? You are a suicide squad. Get in there. Get this done.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, how far in advance you kind of do it, because, you know, some people play in groups where most of the players can't remember what happens week to week.
Well, that's because only one person takes shitty notes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would get the party started, not in Port Nianzaru itself, which is where the campaign actually goes, but on a ship heading into Port Nianzaru, where there is a cultus of a Serac on the ship. And you spend a session as kind of a session zero or whatever, as a party, rooting out this cultist and, like, who's killing people on board, who he feels might, you know, wreck his lord's chance of doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
So, like, get your party together there. That could be your unifying factor. Because one of the plot threads is you were brought together as a party to do this thing by this one powerful person who is ill, right? Mm-hmm. I think she's the mayor of... she's something. I forget what she is. But having her just, like, shotgun blast a million adventurers at Port Nianzaru and be like, go fix this thing. And then, like, your party being the only ones that survived the boat ride back. Like,
Okay. Yeah,
right? That's metal. That's unifying. That gets your characters together. Go. Have fun. Right? Race some dinosaurs.
All right. Cool. No, you're up next, Dan.
Oh, is it me? Yeah. All right. No, I'm not. No.
Yeah, I asked that question.
Yeah, I know.
No, it's me.
So it's him next. I'm number three. I rolled a one and a two.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought we were just going clockwise.
For the counterclockwise.
Counterclockwise.
Yay.
For the fifth question, no, Kyle, in case you remember.
Oh, fifth question? Okay, we got to pick it up, boys.
So it's from King of Rot. My longstanding goal as a DM is to make my players cry at some point, preferably using the game and not blunt force trauma. How do I make my murder hobo party feel empathy, and how do I weaponize it? Well, that one's easy. You just start leaving notes, like, on like the guy. Like, they search a body after they kill someone, and it's a note from the family that's like, "Hi, Papa. I hope you're home soon. Timmy's surgery's next week, and we really need that money you promised." You know, just, like, stuff like that. Try to really, like, tug those heartstrings.
I was going to say use NPCs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I mean... victims is a victim is an NPC, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, when we play, you can beat up on anyone at the party all day, every day. That's fine.
Yeah.
But you touch one of our NPCs,
and I
will remove that hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my character's currently a bard with one hand right now. So.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. But you didn't remove it. I was doing heroic shit. No, use NPCs, man. Like, introduce the adorable goblin NPC, and then have it die as a result of their work.
Yeah, that's right? Pretty good.
I mean, don't make it blatant. Don't be like, hey guys, here's this thing. Now flay it 10 minutes later. No. Give it time. As a DM, your main tool is time. Let the party make their mistakes.
Yeah.
And capitalize on it.
And they will.
And they, they will.
Yeah.
I think you have to make the party, yeah, I agree, use the NPCs, but you have to make the party kind of sympathize with the NPC first. So you have to figure out what your party is, what interests them, what interests their particular characters, right? How to tug on all those heartstrings, right?
Yep.
It's going to take a little bit of playing around.
I think you could be a little bit more blatant with it too, and just be like, hey guys, you are now under interview for whatever reason in the story. You enter into a church or a hospital of some sort to cure a thing that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And who are the main healers in this world? Well, they're spellcasters who are devoted to the god of healing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, he wants to know, if you walked across the street and saw someone suffering on the side of the road next to you, would you help them? If so, how? Right? Ask these, like, direct questions to the party and watch the murder hobos go, I don't know, man, kick them in the teeth. Well, now you have a thing to build off of, right?
Oh,
you have
yeah.
ammunition, right?
Have your NPC kicked in the teeth and lose a bunch of them?
Yeah, right?
That's a good idea.
Make them use their words against them. Adam is the king of, like, putting a situation in front of us that at face value has no other way to go. Like, it's not railroading. It appears to be railroading.
Yeah, we have
all the other paths to go. And then we'll do the thing and it'll be like, guys, there was all these other options. You just had to ask these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, well, shit. Okay. Right. And if you hit your players with that over and over and over again, and I mean, don't be adversarial about it, obviously, because you want to be able to hit them with it over and over again and not have them just abandon the table.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I think you have to, also another good thing to do with your NPCs is you have to make them, what's the word I'm looking for? Like really important to the party, really necessary to the party, right? Like they have to do something heroic to bond themselves.
Yes.
They have to get that pack bonding sense. So have the NPC do something incredibly heroic to save the life of one of the players.
You want to endear them to the party, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
All right. Next question. Tarzan of the Desert asks, if you were a cocktail, what would you be? I'd be an old fashioned.
Damn it, that was going to be my answer.
Really?
Yeah,
we're all basic white dudes.
Old fashions.
Well, I was trying to, because I read that ahead of time, I was just trying to think about who else, you know, would be what. Clearly, Adam is a redheaded slut.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Yeah.
You're goddamn right.
Yeah. Brad, I'm assuming, is a Shirley Temple.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Probably, yeah. Terry is some sort of virgin cocktail, although he wouldn't tell you that.
I think he'd be an IPA.
Yeah.
Oh, like, just a beer? Just like a basic bitch beer?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. That not everybody is a fan of.
Yeah. Megan would be an Irish car bomb.
Yeah, Peps would be some sort of cotton candy martini or something.
Yeah, you might want to watch it with that name of that drink, because Irish people find it incredibly offensive.
Oh.
I found that out when I was dating an Irish girl.
Oh, no. That's just a drink that involves whiskey and Guinness. I'm sorry. Not referencing the Troubles. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail that, though.
Yeah, no worries.
We were on a good roll. So Megan is an Irish car bomb. Who else were you saying?
That's as far as
a car bomb.
Car bomb, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Oh, have you ever heard of a hand grenade?
I've heard of hand grenades, yes, but not in the alcoholic sense.
So the drink, it's like a Jaeger bomb, but at the top with the Jaeger, you put in a shot of tequila, and so you pull the tequila out, it drops the Jaeger into a Red Bull, and then you drink the tequila, and then you drink the Jaeger bomb. So I think that would be Megan.
Interesting.
That just sounds like a drink designed to make people fight. That's something that A Megan.
It gets you where you need to go real quick.
I just think Dan might be a pickleback.
Why?
Because of all the pickles you've had slapping around on your back.
Oh, yeah, okay. We're going to move on now. Yeah. Kyle, ask the next question.
Fucking Gregory asked, for those of us who are newer, what's the origin story of the podcast and how did each host get involved?
I don't know. Yeah. Shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't there, Dan.
Yeah, it was me and Adam. I mean, you asked the question, so how do you think it happened, Kyle?
Oh, man.
I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
I mean, I assume it was just you guys just sitting around bullshitting one day, and you're like, I bet people would listen to this.
So, sort of. So, basically what happened, Adam and I I was playing D&D with Adam's campaign. We were hanging out, and we had tossed around the idea of doing a podcast or something. Adam has an acting background. I'm a gigantic nerd who talks when I'm nervous. So podcasting is great for us. The whole idea of it came around where we wanted to do something. We originally called it Town Time. And it was going to be this big narrative thing that had like a common thread of like this tiefling who was telling you stories. But we really wanted to focus on a DM, like how to make your game better kind D&D podcast. We didn't want to do an actual play because everybody was doing an actual play. This was like, I mean, at this point it was 4 or 5 years ago. I don't even know how long ago it was. It was a bit, but it was from the get-go, it was helping people enjoy D&D more, mm-hmm. And be something that they could listen to make their home games better. Not just there for entertainment purposes. Entertainment was there, of course, but because we're so fucking funny. But the main goal was to help people get better with their games and enjoy D&D more, because we saw this resurgence of Dungeons and Dragons and this resurgence of interest in D&D, and we wanted to be a part of that and help out with that, right? Mm-hmm. So we brought on Terry shortly after, which is when it got changed to It's a Mimic. And the three of us...
Yeah, before Terry joined, you knew what you were going to get.
Yeah. It was going to be Town Time. And we were like heavily scripted. I've actually got on a drive somewhere like 7 episodes that Adam and I recorded of Town Time. And they're bad. They are objectively terrible. So they may never see the light of the day. Adam might get me drunk enough to make me give them to him. But I don't know. Anyways, Terry came on. And then there was 1 week where Terry couldn't make it for whatever reason. He was going out of town or whatever it was. So we brought Brad on. Brad was the fourth host that came on. And then shortly after, Dave joined up and Megan, who plays in our game, joined up, and it was just the 6 of us for a bit. And then, COVID hit. And when COVID hit, that's when we were like, we need to expand big.
Well, because we had to pivot, which means we had to start recording online.
Yeah.
And that just made so much more work.
It was tons more work,
so
right?
So there was more people that needed to come on in order to make that happen.
And we did do a couple like actual play projects, like short run series, like Call of Cthulhu and things like that, that came up. That also brought people into the recording sphere, right? Like, who was on Call of Cthulhu? It was, I was running it. That's when Mieka joined on for the first time. Terry,
Megan, me,
you,
Adam,
and Adam. Mieka. And Mieka, yeah, okay. So, like, that's where Mieka came onto the podcast. How did you come about? I mean,
I was a COVID joiner.
You were a COVID joiner. Yeah, that's right. You were. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, Kyle was playing in my campaign, and it just, I know he's the right fit.
Yeah.
Right? I am also a huge nerd.
Yeah.
You crushed it. Like, I have no problem 4 years removed from that process. Oh, God. COVID was 4 years ago. That means the podcast is 5-6 years? Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I have no problem disparaging the rest of the podcast. There were, like, 12 people that we brought on during that time to like help out with special little things, and they would do a couple monsters, and like we would say, here guys, here's the thing we want to talk to you about, send us your clips, and then we would edit those clips in. Mm-hmm. Right, I spent an inordinate amount of time personally mastering. Adam really nailed down his ability to edit during those times because I just couldn't handle it all.
Yeah.
And between that and Call of Cthulhu, that's where Adam cut his teeth on editing. And where I took a bit of a step back on editing, because I was, to be frank, was getting burned out after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Why was it stressful then?
It's a process, man.
It's a process. It was a process. Like, for every, we had a whole thing, like, for every minute we were recording, it was 5 minutes editing.
Yeah.
Right? So, if we have an hour-long episode, if we have an hour-long episode, well, that's 5 hours editing, right? And, yeah. I mean, that was the Call of Cthulhu series, because we were adding special effects and, like, fine-tooth combing that entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're a little bit more professional with it. We're a little bit more streamlined with the process. Makes it a lot easier. We've got everyone around this table does some sort of editing sometimes.
I have never.
Oh, okay. Well,
zero nada.
We do editing. That's kind of where we went. But a lot of those people that were on during the, COVID, it was like Kyle, mm-hmm. Megan, and like Terry were the ones that really, really locked it down and did a great job. We also had like Jeff join the podcast then. He helped out. Peps helped out there as well.
Tyler a little bit.
Tyler helped out a little bit there. Yep. Right. But like there were a couple people that were just like, they came forward and said, yeah, man, I'm super keen on helping. And then when we had to chase them time and time again. We never had to do that with you. We never had to do that with Megan. We only sometimes had to do that with Terry. So it was a bit of a headache, that process. And when we can meet in the same room again, like we were ready to go. But we're also very health conscious people who were just like, we'll have to figure this out, guys. And I think we did it a little bit longer than we absolutely needed to. But
nobody got sick.
Nobody got sick.
So
no. We all got COVID far after the main initial wave, so...
No, I think I had it early.
Yeah, probably. All right, next question, Dave.
F and Gregory again. How did y'all discover D&D? What was it about D&D that you fell in love with? I discovered it because of Dan. I mean, I've known Dan and Adam and Dan's brother for a 30 long, long plus time. Years. Yeah, you add them all together, it's well over 100 years I've known them collectively. And that hurts my feelings.
That's such a weird way to put it.
That is a really weird way to put it.
Yeah, I've known them collectively for over 100 years.
Yeah.
That's how much damage they have done to me. It's 100 years worth, yeah. We started playing because we were hanging out. We were, you know, being nerds together. And I just kind of snowballed from there. Or fireballed from there, I suppose. Daniel.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
The very first time we ever played.
Yeah, you've said it on the podcast about the very first time you played D&D. Yeah, but it's... You cast a fireball and it was in the web and it killed me.
How did you fall in love with it? I fell in love with Dan murdering me.
Yeah, don't stand next to the spider webs next, you bitch.
Oh, everybody knows they're flammable.
Well, I do now.
So, Nick, who was, I think he did two episodes in the COVID times, is one of my oldest friends. I've known him just a little bit shorter than I've known you, Dave. But he got me into D&D when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in love with it ever since. Most of it is because I have incredibly low self-esteem and love escapism. So that's the real answer.
I mean, isn't that why we're all here?
That's why we're all here. But as I've grown up, that hasn't changed. Kyle?
Yeah.
Dan, I don't do this podcast to learn things about myself, please.
Yeah, okay, sorry. No, I mean, I liked dragons and goblins and stuff, which I do.
Yeah.
I had a friend who, him and I had a massive falling out, and... when we had that massive falling out, he then went hard against anything fantasy purely because it was something I loved.
Hmm.
So
you have a strong effect on people.
Apparently. Huh? It's not just like Dave's aroma.
I started playing when I was 13, I want to say. My cousin introduced it to me, Cody who plays in our game as well. We always just kind of played fantasy shit, like... I don't know. I grew up, but when I was a kid, my dad used to read me Redwall books, so that kind of like inspired my love of fantasy, and I've always kind of loved that shit. I love magic.
I've been meaning to read Redwall with the kids, but I've always been kind of cautious because of it's Redwall.
Yeah. Wait, what is it about Redwall that doesn't...
My children really like bunnies.
Okay. Honestly, I can't remember it well enough.
Redwall has a reputation of being quite bloody.
Yeah, and it was pretty dark
and,
for a kid.
And violent for kids, right? But my daughters are now 10. I've got twins. One of them is obsessed with rabbits. So I'm like, okay, here's Redwall. I'm a good dad. What's our next question here? King of Rot asks for Tyler. Well, too bad, you get the rest of us. Could you please give a quick rundown of your favorite things in your own world building? My favorite thing in my own world building right now is geopolitical structures, which is weird, and specifically my Pantheon. I have a campaign that meets once every other week on Mondays with a bunch of my buddies that play in my world. They're currently searching for a ship of legend called the Dieni, which crashed and is...
Hold on, the Dieni? Did you name it after yourself?
Shut up. It's the Dieni. It's D-Y-E-N-I.
Oh, so you named it after the restaurant.
the weapon that killed the god was just a stack of pancakes. It was a grand slam. No, the
diabetes, and it pushed him over the edge.
They came to me, they said they want to run a pirate game. I'm like, all right, well, I'm building this world for fun anyways, let's do it, right?
Yeah.
And I have been slowly adding to this world, and now I love it. I don't want to run D&D anywhere else. I just want to run it in my world. I have a massive transcontinental war going that is not part of the campaign.
Okay. It's just for your own.
It's my own like theory crafting, lore building giggles. That's all it's there for, right? So the War of the Wilted Tree is going on in on the northern continent. Meanwhile, these guys are bumblefucking their way around in the southern continent, in a place called Erna that is run by Dragonborn. And one of the players is a Dragonborn paladin who, when everyone said, we want to play a fucking pirate campaign, he went, gold Dragonborn paladin in full plate mail armor. And I was like, you're a fucking... God, fuck you, Jared. But his character's just become this... he's a fucking idiot. He is lawful stupid to a fault. But it's entertaining. It's lots of fun. We've brought in another one of our friends recently. One of my buddies is moving back to town, and he doesn't have a choice. Nick, he's joining my campaign. Mm-hmm. I will find a spot around that table for him. But I love it. And it's the balancing the geopolitical stuff for me at this age with my brain and what's going on in the world, and is always on the forefront of my mind.
Yeah.
It's fun to see kind of how the world is responding to a massive war that might not be directly impacting where the players are right now, but there is side effects.
Yeah. Ripples kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. I can't actually talk about my favorite thing because Dave's currently playing in my campaign and I can't give it away.
Okay. That's fine.
If I was going to tell you about my favorite thing in my world that I built, I would just refer you to the Eberron campaign setting.
Yep.
And show you a bunch of cool stuff from there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I just like making monsters and villains. Like, that's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. I like making up monsters. Mm-hmm. I'm not so great at villains.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm too nice. Like, I don't want to sit there and just, like... slowly torture my friends. I want them to be like, hey guys, look at this kooky new monster I have here. It's a goblin, but he's made of ash. But like it's stuff like that I love doing.
Yeah.
But like my main villain right now, one of my biggest things, I have severe ADHD. If you listen to this podcast for a while, you understand Dan has ADHD.
I'm pretty sure they could have gotten that just from this episode alone.
Yeah. There is a Cult of the Broken Chain and an Order of the Chain, and I have gotten them confused time and time again in my world, to the point where my players now ask me, Dan, is this the Broken Chain? Are these the good ones or the evil ones? And I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
Guys, I don't fucking know.
You tell me.
I have it written.
Insight check.
I have it written in four different spots, and each one of them is different of who's the bad guy and who's with what order.
See, that's what happens when you prep, Dan.
Yeah, no, it is.
Right? Just don't prep.
Nope.
Best advice. I honestly had that problem as well, where I'll write something and then I'll be like, nah, it could be better. And then I'll keep going back until I've written the same thing like 7 or 8 times.
Yep. Here's a pro tip. Don't name your groups or your orders or whatever they are too similarly.
Yeah. Fair enough. Or it's to me now?
Yep.
FN Gregory again asks, do y'all have any good resources for becoming a better DM? How about becoming a better player? Well, this podcast.
Yeah, I was about to say, this little podcast. Next question. but like unironically, this podcast, right? There's not a lot of projects out there that Are specifically designed to make you better DMs.
Yeah.
Specifically designed to make you better players.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I do, one thing I would probably...
Therapy.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would probably do is make sure that you're having a conversation with your players or with your DM and just trying to figure out, right? Because it's easier when you're outside looking in
mm-hmm.
than it is, like, trying to look at yourself in a mirror. And because you don't always know which parts are a problem. So, I mean, being open to feedback is a very good thing.
Here's one thing. I think I've mentioned it before. Dave, you're not doing a lot of talking. Nope. You got any input in this?
I mean, no.
Before I throw out my idea.
Well, I was going to say, like, for input resources to become a better DM, honestly, I spent a lot of time on Reddit when I was on Reddit. I don't go on there anymore, but I would just start reading people's posts, and I would sort by new, right? And I would just go through because I'm looking at, like, these one-off problems. And I may not have a solution. I'm not maybe always engaging with them in a conversation, but it's kind of giving me an idea of these are other problems that people are encountering. Mm-hmm. How can I not have this problem later on? Like plan yeah. for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say one of the things that I've really enjoyed doing is giving inspiration dice at the end of the session, mm-hmm. but I don't actually give the inspiration dice. I say, guys, you have a D4. Each of you has one D4. Give it to another player and tell me why,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'll have like, Jared, you one-shot that dire shark really well earlier in the session, you get a D4. And then these D4s are stackable. They're only a D4. They're like a once-off guidance roll,
mm-hmm.
That you could apply to any D20 roll, right? And, it's fun because it gets your players invested enough to be like, oh, you did this cool thing. And yeah. now they're talking to each other about these cool things that they're doing, during the session. But also like, I've had players use it for emotional moments,
mm-hmm.
right? And having a quantifiable reward system mm-hmm. will help your players become more invested and help you become more invested because you get to see what they found interesting
yeah.
around the table, which will make you a better DM, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. I guess that makes it my turn to read a question?
No, it's yours. Again, right?
Yep.
From Zan, do you underline/highlight your D&D books? How do you study them? No, don't ever mark my books aside from my last name in the front corner of the like first page. Don't mark my books. We have tabs. Thank you. Yeah. And that's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Post-it note tabs. I got thousands of them in my book.
Yeah.
Post-it note tabs. I don't write in my book. I don't highlight. No. It eventually highlighting will just get distracting because I'll just be like, highlight everything.
Yeah, it ruins the aesthetic for me. I like the nice, clean, crisp pages.
Exactly.
I'll throw out this quick tip. If you are having to come up with something on a fly and you can't quite remember the mechanics of something, on the base edition Dungeon Master screen, there is a like applicable dice rolls based off CR.
Yeah.
Like this is how many hit points the thing will have. This is how many damage it should probably do. Something like that. Don't feel so constrained as a DM by the mechanics of a system. Reference that table to put in something close.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have every right to do that as a DM. So it's not so much your note-taking or your memorizing of the campaigns moving on from there. Because I'm terrible at reading through these things and fucking memorizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely horrible. It's just repetition. You just got to read it a bunch of times, play them a bunch of times. That's the yeah. best. That's the best way to keep notes on this. But having a safety net of that has helped my DMing mm-hmm. loads. Anyways, next question. I skipped one to the next one. So anyways, what hobbies do you, assorted hosts, have other than D&D? Music and right now work. Also woodworking.
I don't think that counts as a hobby. Dan.
Yeah.
No, it's a very penetrating business.
Hobbies are fun. Just so you know.
Since when? Have you played D&D? It's not fun. It's drama.
Fun. Yeah. We just sit there and throw candy at each other. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's true. Sorry, Adam.
No.
No apologies.
Hobbies.
For me, I go to a lot of live music. That's a big thing for me. Man, I don't know. I'm sure I have more, but I can't remember what they are now.
Yeah, I mean,
I like to write, I like to draw, but I mean,
mm-hmm. yep.
Yeah.
Dave? I mean, I'm a big sports guy. I went on a big trip here just over New Year's. I went down and caught a football game in Seattle and then went to the Winter Classic.
Who's your team?
Oh, the Steelers, obviously.
Yeah.
Because they're the best. Yeah.
Sports ball.
Didn't they just pick up Russell Wilson?
Is it official yet? Is it the start of the league season? I don't know. It might be. Yeah, they did. But
how do you feel about that?
We're
going to talk football here for a second,
okay,
folks.
So I feel okay because he's supposed to come in here and teach Pickett how to throw the ball and be like a good quarterback, right? Yeah. They're not hiring Russell Wilson to come in and be the day one starter.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So to have him in the background.
Isn't that what coaches are for?
Not in a quarterback room.
Okay.
Right? Because when you have these coaches are good, but not every coach was a quarterback. Right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it helps to have these veteran players, guys like Russell Wilson, who have gone all the way, won it all, lost it all, and, you know, you have this experience to help lead the team, right?
Yeah.
You're not buying a quarterback, you're buying a leader for your team.
Yeah.
And that is invaluable.
Yeah.
So if like you can get it to a team-friendly deal.
What's the over-under that he's going to blow his Achilles tendon like Aaron did?
I don't think he's going to actually see a snap.
You don't think he's going to
outside of the preseason. So,
okay.
I hope not. If he does, that means that something has gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's not quite as old as Aaron is, but.
Well, no, most aren't.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. Sports.
Sports.
Oh, all right.
And outdoors.
Yeah, you do a lot of camping still, which is kind of how we all. That's like the foundation of our friendship was camping and scouts and yeah.
Makusa asks, on a scale of 1 to 10, how dexterous are your feet?
You gotta answer first.
6. I mean, like I'm a pretty tall dude with pretty big feet, so I can pick stuff up with my toes. But I mean, I can't. I'm not gonna be driving a car with them or painting.
I don't think he's asking because of driving a car.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on. You use your feet to drive a car.
Steer the wheel.
Yeah, no,
you're not gripping it by the husk.
No,
all right,
I'm talking about those people that like have no arms have their car retrofitted to drive with their feet, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to be able to do that with my feet, but I can like pick up a pencil. So,
yeah, I mean, I'd say like a 7. I got like my index toe is longer than my big toe.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
So I can find it to like I find it to be like really good for grabbing stuff and like.
This is going to sound really, really weird. My toes are longer than my kids' fingers.
Yeah.
Like I've got very big feet and very long toes. I would say a solid 10.
Yeah, you could make some money.
I can make some money with these things.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Yeah.
Tune in next week.
No. Tune in never. Dave, next question.
Effin Gregory again. When you finish the campaign builder, have you considered publishing it as a book or module? I am not involved in the campaign builder. And
Adam and I started the campaign builder. Yeah. The campaign builder is what Town Time kind of was. When we first started off the podcast, that it was supposed to be something similar to campaign builder. No spoilers.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
Honestly, every time you say Town Time, it sounds like a children's show that's going to teach me colors.
What was that show that Andy Samberg had? It was something time. This was like 15 years. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, moving on. Yeah.
All right. I think it's my turn to ask the question, right? Yep. What are y'all's tips for home brewing monsters? I read in what's in the DMG and found it helpful, but also noticed that the Monster Manual and Monsters of the Multiverse break a lot of the things they set forth in the DMG. So it got me curious about what y'all would suggest or add. That's from OKMention1615 on Reddit. Exactly what I said before. Use that little chart that's on your DM screen of what challenged by CR is. Understand the CR system really, really well. It is a bit of a egg to wrap your brain around, but
yeah, it's also not a perfect system.
It's not a perfect system. No. And remember, monsters and their stats are 67% of the problem. Environment is the other 33%.
Yeah.
So if you are encountering a monster in a flat plane on a sunny Thursday morning, you're doing it wrong. Remember your environment, put your environment to work when you're building encounters with unique new monsters, right? And just have fun with it. Be weird. This is D&D. Be weird.
I think the other thing is be flexible. If you start an encounter and it's not working, change it within reason.
Yeah.
You know, be
consistent.
Yeah. You have to be consistent, but you can change it, right? Like a lot of the times, for instance, I always got you guys with the Drow Parry ability, right?
Yeah.
So once per turn, they can use their reaction to bump up their AC for one melee attack. Well, for the longest time, I only used it on the first melee attack. But then I started waiting because I started thinking, like, these monsters know what they're doing. So the drow's going to wait and use it when that fucking berserker guy with the axe comes over and starts swinging at him. Not when this frail old man with a wooden stick comes over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, those are very different. So we're going to focus it on other things. And I found, like, being flexible like that just helped me a little bit. And always, of course, change the hit points when you can.
Yeah, that's always good. Yeah. My advice is you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Find an appropriate stat block with an appropriate CR for what you're kind of looking for.
And reskin the appearance.
Yeah. Or just, like, retrofit it, right? Like, change out one ability for another, right? Like, change out Amphibious for a flying speed or something like that, right?
Yeah, like Fury of the Small mixed with pack tactics.
Yeah.
And you can have some pretty dang cool goblin dogs, right? Like if you're importing Pathfinder over into 5e, right? Like it, Adam has done a thing, and I've done this as well around my table, where we will find the miniature that we want to use and then make up the monster around that miniature, right? Because yes, D&D has and WizKids have put out a bunch of cool 5e monsters and things. Pathfinder has more. Go to Pathfinder. Yeah. And I know this is the 5e podcast, and but if you're looking for inspiration for weird fucking monsters that your party won't expect, find other sources, right? Yeah. Look into Call of Cthulhu, look into Vampire the Masquerade.
Or Grimoire we were talking about, right? Yeah, like yeah. There's other stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
You can find it.
Yep.
I'm sure I get the long one. So this is from OK Mention. How do you decide how many creatures the players must defeat to destroy, disband, conquer a mob? I've read what the DMG suggests on how to run them, which I don't like, and I like how Xanathar's Guide to Everything breaks down encounter matchups. So I'm specifically talking about high level with tons of mobs. I typically use 4th ed rules for minions, per Adam's suggestion, so they only have 1 HP. But I can't find anything that suggests when to make an encounter end. This has resulted in both the players obliterating everything in sight and just feeling bad about how one-sided it was. Or I just look up randomly after realizing this is going to be a TPK slash too much for the party right now, so I say, and the rest get scared and run away. So basically, what do y'all find that sweet spot in between? I mean, that's a tough question.
No, it's not. I got a really easy answer.
Oh, okay. Sure, Dan. Thanks.
I also have an easy answer for this.
Yeah. If you know you're going to be doing a... for one, you should never do a swarm battle off the cuff. You should know that you're doing a massive siege battle beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the lazy DM, so I'm not going to tell you to overly prep it, but know that in your average 3 to 4 hour session, if that entire thing is combat and it's a siege combat, your siege is not really lasting more than 6 turns, 8 turns. So have stages. Think your Final Fantasy boss with this one. Have stages. At 3 turns, this thing happens. At 6 turns, this thing happens. And at 8 turns, this thing happens, right? And that's when it ends. Or at 6 turns, that's when it ends. And it's every second, third, and sixth, right? Or whatever. Second, fourth, and sixth. I'm good at math. Break it up evenly to keep things interesting. But have stages where different things happen. So you're fighting that swarm, that's 2 rounds.
Yeah.
If they win that round, maybe approach it like a bit of a combat encounter as well, right? Like,
yeah.
If someone wants to try to persuade half this section to fight for you and change sides, you can do that.
Yeah.
Don't necessarily run it like a straight combat.
Yeah, I don't think he's asking specifically like siege situations. He's talking about like a boss battle, right? Where you're...
Well, he says high level versus lots of low level mobs.
Yeah.
So like your party's going to kill it. You're going to get overrun by numbers. And the biggest villain in Dungeons and Dragons is the action economy. Mm-hmm. So 2 rounds in, have a thing happen that changes the landscape of the battle.
Yeah.
4 rounds in, have something that changes the landscape of the battle. Which is usually your boss shows up, and then turn 6, battle's over. How does it end?
Yeah.
Right. And I would just go into the thing assuming that. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the first part of the question was, how do you decide how many? And for me, that was always pretty easy because I would try to use a bunch of different things enough to keep it interesting. But that's, I would always try to read my players and I would try to make it last as long as it was interesting.
Yes.
Right? And that's why I think I really struggled DMing on the computer, like over or online. I couldn't get that read from everybody.
Yeah.
And it became very frustrating for me, right? Yeah. So, but
it's also easy for players to get distracted that way.
Oh my God, is it ever, yeah. Right? So, especially, well, we can talk about Anthony all night.
Yeah.
But
he's the worst one, but.
No, it's probably me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's better to, I find, to be more engaged when I'm right up close.
Yeah.
And then, but as long as I can get a read and feel that it's still progressing and not caught in a lull, let's keep going. But again, Dan, you're right. Like, throw in a couple more guys, throw in waves of them, right?
Yeah.
How often do we start an encounter and then we finish the encounter and move on?
Yeah.
More times than not, right? But very rarely do you actually have that second wave come in. And when you do, it kind of takes them like a second to readjust. It's like, oh, hold on, I gotta think about what I'm doing with my spells for a second.
If your player's sitting there just going, I lightning bolt it, and that's the end of their turn. I lightning bolt, and that's the end of their turn. I fireball, and that's the end of their turn. It's boring, right? Yeah, you get to roll a bunch of dice, and yeah, you get to pick up handfuls of miniatures off
sometimes
the table.
Sometimes you got to run over and slap a gelatinous cube.
Sometimes you have to run over and slap a gelatinous cube as a level 1 Leonin barbarian. You're a fucking moron.
It worked. It worked.
It didn't.
It did. I didn't die. Yeah. Therefore, then. It worked.
You didn't die then.
But I wasn't even there when I died, Daniel.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, so...
Sorry, Kyle, go ahead.
My advice would be, don't pigeonhole yourself, right? I like the idea of changing the landscape. Yeah, I think that's great. I think you can do the both figuratively and literally, right? Like, change, make something happen on the map. A dam collapses, and now half the map is flooded. So players have to readjust how they're fighting. Maybe you just split up the party because now they can't get to each other because there's a deep river behind them, right? So it changes the dynamic of the whole thing, right? And then have your waves, but don't necessarily commit yourself to forcing it into the game, right? Like if you feel the battle come to the end or, you know, it just feels like a good spot here, then you can just end it and then don't worry about that, right? But give yourself options.
Keep in mind, like, there is, I have a feeling one of the things out there is also, like, have this many minions, fire against this many minions, and you don't want to go, like, one minion at a time when you're dealing with armies.
Yeah.
Right? It is just boring. So, have your players function not so much as frontline fighters, even if they are a barbarian or a frontline fighter, but have them behave as generals and have them command groups at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, and like this is when you would do this theater of mind, you don't put minis on the table for this because like, be like, you're taking care of the southwest gate, you're taking care of the north gate, you're taking care of the east gate, you're inside the city, you're on the outer walls by that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
What is your group doing? And what is the focus of your group? You could roll up like what kind of force they have under their command beforehand.
Yeah.
And then you're just playing tabletop war games, narratively. Which I think is awesome, right?
Yeah.
But whether you're dealing with a siege or you're fighting a single monster in the middle of a field, environment, like you said, is a massive part of the equation, right? If you are neglecting the environment, you are not creating a session or an encounter that is going to be realistic and thus not memorable, right? You can have reality-bending monsters, but they still need to be grounded in some form of reality for them to bend that reality.
Yeah.
Right? So, have an environment.
Okay, so talking about like NPC actions, Adam mentioned on another episode that I was on with him, he doesn't roll to hit for NPCs. It's just damage.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It speeds up the game. You don't bog down your turn. Like, players aren't waiting for them to go and something that does not involve them at all is happening in front, right? Like, just go, okay, this group fires a volley of arrows. Oh, it kills, roll two dice and it kills six people or something.
Yeah.
Right? And then I use that as like a subtraction for when you do the next volley for that and all that stuff.
Okay. Next question. Daffod.
The next question, what are we at here? Oh, number 17, groundbreaking top 3-3. Have you heard of the island of Sina Una? It is a new campaign setting for 5th edition that pulls from pre-colonial mythology and culture of the Philippines. I have not heard of that.
I have heard of it. I know nothing about it. But the pre-colonial culture of the Philippines is full of a bunch of real weird fucking cryptid shit.
Yeah.
And I'm there for it. So.
Oh, it sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have been like, I saw this pop up on my feed and it's bookmarked to like, hey, Dan, look at this later. Because, yes, please.
Yeah. The Philippines is really cool because they have like 300-something unique languages.
Yeah.
So it could even be like vastly understating how many it is because it's an island nation, yeah. Right?
So not everything's Tagalog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
Tagalog.
Tagalog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry if that was offensive.
I'm excited to see it, though. I'm excited to see more non-Western-based creatures and mythology and lore and stuff.
Yeah.
You're right, but I do find that a lot of even, like, the basic monsters are pulled from other cultures' lore.
Yeah,
like,
but I mean...
it is prevalent. You're right. Yeah, I know. It is fairly Western-based stuff, right?
Well, it's also, like, we're nerds, and we've grown up as nerds, so we have a loose idea of... Chinese mythology. We have a slightly better grasp of Japanese mythology and monsters found within Japanese mythology. Our North American knowledge and our European knowledge is pretty good. Western European, not so much Eastern European, but like Eastern Europe, the African cultures and mythology, Southeast Asia and India. These places have some great...
Untapped gold mine of
myth and legend to pull from for your D&D games.
Yeah. I mean, I really like the Rakshasa, which is from Indian mythology.
Yeah. No. The backwards hands.
Yeah. God damn it, Dave.
Who is the cheekiest podcaster of those not present? Adam, moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean... Megan Mieka is up there.
Yep.
But for sheer cheek.
Adam. Yeah, it's Adam.
You're goddamn right.
Right, and like respectfully, it's Adam. Yeah. The man's got that down to an R4.
No. Disrespectfully.
Disrespectfully, it's Adam? Yeah, okay. The next one starts with my name, so I'm just going to break the order here and read this.
Go nuts.
Dan, since he's gone off about how it... the previous one was Alexander, another skip. This one is also another skip. Dan, since he's gone off about how about his he's gone off how about his friends in order of closeness, what is Dan's most painful insect encounter? I'm not a big fan of bugs. I mean, I was a Boy Scout, so I was outside. I just know in the summer when I go camping, I'm walking away with at least 100 mosquito bites. Mosquitoes fucking love me.
Yeah.
Somebody's gotta.
Yeah. That's not a painful encounter, though. I got stung by a bee on the inside of my lip one time when I was
a kid. I got scratched by a cat on the inside of my mouth one time.
I got scratched by a cat on my eyelid.
Yeah.
That hurt. Yeah.
You're lucky, because cat's paws are gross, and you're lucky that I didn't get infected.
Yeah.
I got stung by a wasp on the inside knuckles of my hands, which I'm not allergic to them. I didn't have a massive reaction, but I work with my hands. So, like, it was just it was on the inside of a joint. So, like, it just never healed. And, like, for a summer.
And every time you move your hand.
It hurt like a bitch. But,
I don't know. I was out in the woods one time camping, and I woke up one morning. I guess a spider had bitten me in the face. My entire left eye was, like, sort of droopy a little bit. And, like, it was super swollen and everything. But, I mean, I wasn't going to go get it checked out.
Okay.
You could see two little punctures, but, like, it was, you know.
Okay, I changed my... So, I have a scar on my ear from when I got bit by a spider from camping. And, like, right behind my ear, it swelled up. And it was just a pus-filled sack about the size of a golf ball.
Oh.
And it just, like, would not go away. It hurt so bad, so bad. And then I was laying on the couch one day, and then I felt something wet behind my head, and it had, like, popped. And it was just, so much pus.
And that's all we have for tonight. Thank you very much.
Right, we're going to be done now, Chris. I think it's your turn for that question.
I believe it is Dave.
Oh, yeah, I straight up took your last one. Sorry. Yeah.
Is also another skip. What would you name a chess knight for humor purposes? I don't know, something with like a sir pun.
Circumference?
Circumstance.
Like, circumstance.
Yeah, it's like the way that you stand in the mirror when you're not wearing the clothes. You stand looking in the mirror. Yeah. That's your cum stance, right? So that is circumstance. He is not good at it.
Oh my god,
no!
All right, did I win?
No,
I call that the sundial.
Jesus Christ.
I'm gonna bandwagon off yours, sir up, because it jumps over other players.
Syrup?
Yeah.
Sweet. Love that one.
I'm not engaging in punnery. It is the lowest form of humor.
Come on, Dan.
One of us.
I have 7 year, 8 year, however long of this podcast of well-documented hatred of punnery.
Fine, you still have to give us an answer, though.
No, I don't. Yeah, I give two answers to previous ones. I'm good.
A pun? It doesn't have to be a pun.
A good night name for humor purposes?
Yeah.
Chester.
Nice.
Chester's good. I honestly it takes me a while to come up with these kind of things. I don't get them off the top of my head.
Spot?
Just trying to think like something about...
Belvedere? Because he's a horse?
You're a horse. Of course, of course.
Of course, of course. Yeah.
Mr. Ed is no longer Mr. He is Sir Ed now.
Sir Ed, yeah. Sir Ed. There we go. Sir Ed.
You got knighted.
Well, you didn't get dated.
Way to date ourselves a little bit there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Mr. Belvedere and Mr. Ed, huh? Uh-oh.
I mean, I think those were both still before my time.
I mean, they were before our time, too, yeah. But like...
We know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the youngest one here, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Oh, I don't get to say that often.
I don't like being the oldest one in the room. Adam!
Get in here!
Adam, come back!
Thanks for listening to another round of Insane Ramblings on the It's a Mimic channel. If you'd like to ask us questions that we'll definitely answer no matter what, Dan, you can reach out to us through the mailbag post in the subreddit r/It's a Mimic. Hit us up through Facebook or Instagram. Send us messages through the website or join our Patreon, which has a Discord channel dedicated to the mailbag questions. It's first come, first serve, so get those answers in ASAP. Get those questions in ASAP. So we already have... No, yeah.
Start it again from if you have any questions, yeah. Or if you'd like to ask us questions.
I'm just gonna blow it up because it's tiny, tiny text.
Yeah.
Go
right up to the second sentence because you were kind of muddling through all those other things.
If you'd like to ask us questions that we'll definitely answer no matter what, Dan, you can reach out to us through the mailbag post in subreddit r/It's a Mimic. Hit us up through Facebook or Instagram. Send us messages through the website or join our Patreon, which has a Discord channel dedicated to mailbag questions. It's first come, first serve, so get those questions in ASAP. We already have a handful of overflow questions for the next mailbag in 3 months. And again, thanks for listening and supporting us at It's a Mimic, where you never know what you're going to get. Thanks for listening to another round of Insane Ramblings on the It's a Mimic channel. If you'd like to ask us questions that we'll definitely answer no matter what, see Dan, you have to answer.
No.
You can reach out to us through mailbag post in the subreddit.
Sorry, start it again.
You're goddamn right.